Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Guter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Tor!
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Today we'll look at all of the action from match day 23. It was an exciting weekend of football at both ends of the table. We saw one side in particular stake a serious claim at promotion and potentially winning the title. A new manager for Hamburg, they were hoping to score their first win under Steffen Baumgart. And could Hannover keep the pace with the leading three? At the relegation end, you look at teams like Rostock, Braunschweig, Schalke, Kaiserslautern, even Wiesbaden and Osnabrück all in action seeking to get away from the bottom two plus the relegation playoff spot. There was plenty to play for on match day 23. We start in Kiel at the Holstein Stadion on Friday night. It was Holstein Kiel, second place in the table against the league leaders St. Pauli, and we were treated to an absolute ripper of a game, another 7-goal thriller, and we've had a plethora of those throughout the campaign, but it was the visitors, St. Pauli, winning on this occasion by 4-3, and more importantly, extending their lead atop of the table. They are now 6 points clear of Holstein Kiel, who lead the chasing pack. The goal scorers for St. Pauli, a brace from Dapo Afellain, although initially, the first goal of the match was given to Irvine as his deflection steered the ball into the net, but they re-clarified that and gave the goal to Afellain. He has 6 goals this season. Marcel Hartl also got on the score sheet. It was an electric first half from St. Pauli to be 3-0 at the break. Connor Metcalf got the 4th goal for St. Pauli. A much better, more efficient second half for Kiel. Shuto Machino, Joshua Mies, and new signing Alexander Berhansson. Bernhansen was really good when he came on as a substitute. We'll talk about him in a moment. But for St. Pauli, we sort of had an inkling of what their team might look like. You know, with Saad missing due to the red card suspension, Metcalf coming in to play on the right, Afellain moved to the left, as we expected, and lots of really good positive actions with Afellain in the first half. That worked really well. He had very much the better of Timo Becker, who was playing on that right-hand side of defence. And yeah, it just never seemed as if they were particularly comfortable dealing with the threat. And, you know, Afellain's been in pretty good form of late. Several goals to his name. He scored last week as well. And yeah, if they're going to continue this trend of progressing up, they need him to continue to fire. It's good to see him getting some form. Hartl, of course, as you would expect, you know, really leading the charge. And it was kind of an interesting look, you know, that Hertzler went with. You know, Hartl playing far more progressive. Kemlein playing alongside Irvine in that midfield. And just that real dynamic look that they had. You know, it's very unusual that you see a team that has such attacking options like St. Pauli do not need them. That was how well they played in the especially in the first half. They did sit back and this is sort of the threat where you don't want to put yourself in unnecessary danger, but arguably going against the way that they typically play enabled Kiel to really take the ascendancy in the second half. And you know, the positive for Kiel is they won the second half 3-1. They were very impressive. They were a lot more efficient. I think having Philip Zander, who's returning from injury, helped a lot. You know, we've been talking about this team as really had to do a lot with not much in terms of their top players due to injury. But yeah, getting him back, they looked a little bit more cohesive in midfield. And yeah, you know, Mies was also a very good substitution. So yeah, look. As much as Kiel will be disappointed they didn't win the game, which is fair enough, there's a lot they showed that they can very much compete with St. Pauli, and they could have easily got an equaliser. Bernhansen had that chance late before stoppage time to equalise, but his efforts unfortunately went over the crossbar. There was a scene in the first half where Kiel thought they had scored, and it was really tight. And this is why we look forward to goal line technology coming in next season, because the still camera that they had behind the on the byline, it paints a very close picture, and you know, it's hard to tell. It was millimeters, if not less than, from crossing the goal line, and initially they didn't give that one, as it were. It did seem, though, after that chance, Kiel fatigued quite heavily, and ultimately they just couldn't run with St. Pauli, and St. Pauli had those two chances late in stoppage time through Bukalfa, who came in as a second-half sub, and Hartl, which they could have easily made at 5 or 6, but both hitting the crossbar. Bukalfa's goal, if that had gone in, would have been one of the top goals of the season. But yeah, look, you know, ultimately the game was played on efficiency, and St. Pauli's efficiency in the first half really was at their mercy. They had 3 shots on target in the first half, and they scored all 3. And where Kiel had their opportunities, they were either denied by the goal line, or it was some sort of woodwork. I think Kiel showed a lot, and would give a lot of people reason to think that they can very much match it as a promotion candidate. And you know, granted they didn't get favorable results from the game that we're going to talk about next, they still have really good positioning, and I think the biggest thing that Kiel have done throughout the season is it's been very much goals by committee. They have a lot of guys who can score. And I think, yeah, they're in a good spot. It'll be interesting to see how they go against Hertha at the Olympiastadion. I feel really confident. Their fixture list heading into the international break is Hertha, Karlsruhe and Elversberg. And I think you're feeling pretty good that they can take some points, just see how stable the defence is. They did switch it up a little bit due to personnel. So they had Patrick Erosz with Kleiner Becker in defence. And that worked not too badly in the second half. But the first half, yeah, they were under pressure. Eros made that mistake that led to the goal, the second goal. Sorry, Alfa Line's second goal. But yeah, we'll see what they come up with next week. But definitely those changes worked in their favour, you know, switching out Skripski and Schultz for Mies and Zander, got them that a little bit more control in it. And Bernhardsson was a very, you know, if that's the impact he's going to get off the bench, then, you know, that's another string in the bow, because I was very impressed with his performance coming off the Schneid. So St. Pauli, 6 points clear. They've got some tricky fixtures. I mean, they've got Schalke away, which they will feel they're a red-hot chance of winning. Hertha at home, which they should win, potentially. And then Nürnberg away. All 3 games are very winnable on their current form. I know they were a bit defensively fragile on the weekend. But given how these 3 teams that they're playing next are tracking, you could make a very genuine case that they can win all 3 games, and potentially comfortably as well. Let's talk about Hamburg. And of course, the talk of the town was that Steffen Baumgart would be managing his first game as Hamburg coach, someone who was on the radar during the winter break, and potentially there could have been the idea of bringing him in, which may have made a lot more sense than the way Hamburg did it, but alas, I'm not here to judge. The one thing they did, and they really bought into Baumgart's aura, is the hat, the sort of Peaky Blinders style hat that he wears on the touchline, and how quickly they got those made with his iconic 72 on the side and the Hamburg diamonds on the right hand side. And apparently they were selling like hotcakes, as they say. But could he transform this team? And early on, it seemed as if they were a bit flat forward of the ball. I thought Elversberg were quite good in the first half, and they had two really good chances through Palvana and Shaheen, and you know, Varna missed wide, and Shaheen forced a really good save from Mattia Rabb. And that was an interesting story, that Rabb won over the job over Daniel Hoyer Fernandez which I think a lot of us had DHF to start this game against Elversberg, but I thought Rab was quite good. Certainly seemed a lot more confident. That probably had a lot to do with Sebastian Schonlau back in the starting 11, along with Dennis Hansi Kardunic. Ramos and Ambrosius weren't even in the squad for the game, which tells you what Baumgart really thought of that. But obviously having Schonlau, you know, the club captain and someone who is clearly one of the best centre-backs in the league, makes a massive difference to the way this team defends. And I sense that Rab fed off the confidence and having a defence that was a lot more stable than it had been the previous two games he'd been between the sticks. So it makes a massive difference. What also makes a massive difference is taking the lead, which is what Hamburg did on 53 minutes. Glatzel finding Ransford, Yeboah, Konigsdorfer, and even with the angle on the trickier side of things, he absolutely belted the ball past Nicholas Kristoff. And that was the only goal of the game. 1-0 win for Hamburg. It means they are now only a point behind Kiel in the hunt for automatic promotion. But more importantly, they gap the team we'll talk about next in the standings. And it was quite an interesting team selection that he went with. Baumgart, obviously having Ferreira, Rice and Mehrfurt. Jatta playing on the right-hand side, which was obviously a necessity. Didn't have Dompe. He was deemed not fit enough to play, according to FOTMob. But yeah, massive win for them. And you can just... The confidence you get from getting your first win with the new manager, and we talk about the new manager bounce. But the consistency has always been the problem for Hamburg over the course of Volta's time. And you can go all the way back to the start with Christian Tietz, Hannes Wolf, Dieter Hecking, Daniel Thiun, you know, even Horst Hubrecht when he was the caretaker. Consistency. They wanted defensive stability. Okay, clean sheets, great. That's a good start. And obviously keeping... I don't know what you got to do to Sebastian Schonlau, but protect him with everything you can to make sure he's fit and healthy for every game, because he made a massive difference to them structurally. They were a lot more organized when Elversberg were attacking in the first half. And even though they had the good opportunities, the main thing was that they looked a lot more compact, a lot more together. None of this... They didn't often get caught out in transitional play, which is one of the biggest things we saw over the last few weeks, where teams would just run at Hamburg and you would watch them just be so disorganized defensively. So that was a real positive for them. But we'll see. Their next three games, Osnabrück at home, which is a game they will feel they should win. The big one is Fortuna Düsseldorf on a Friday night, and then Wiesbaden at home. So if you take it with sort of like what the fixture is producing here, they should be looking for at least 6 points here. Theoretically speaking, two of the three home games, it ends a stand of 3 out of 4 against all three of the sides that were promoted from last season. Two of those sides are very much in the relegation battle. The other one is in mid-table, which they were able to get past. They should be seeking some points here, and obviously building upon the defensive stability of the last of this game on Sunday, but obviously ideally keeping the attacking threat that they've shown throughout the campaign with the likes of Robert Glatzel. That's what they'll be hoping. For Elversberg, yeah, they had that really good first half. I thought they put Baumgart's team under pressure. But they really only had one good chance after that, and that was the effort that was eventually headed on by Van der Mersch, which was well saved by Mattia Rab. Not a particularly easy save for the goalkeeper, but they just weren't able to gain a foothold in the match. It never felt as if they were like a massive threat to Hamburg defensively. It just seemed that they didn't have the energy. And look, that was more of a testament to Hamburg defensively. We were much improved. Elversberg have got Wiesbaden at home, then it's Greuther Fürth away, and then Kiel at home. That's before the international break. Now, let's talk about Hannover, because they had a really good opportunity to continue the pressure on Hamburg and potentially close the gap to others if they were able to beat Osnabrück on Saturday afternoon. The stadium under Bremer Brucker was in full swing of magnificent atmosphere, plenty of colour, but only one goal. And no, it was not Hannover who couldn't extend their four-game winning run. It was Osnabrück. Robert Tescher finding Erik Engelhardt just after the hour mark. Engelhardt's now got 7 goals this season. And on a match day where so many of the teams in the relegation fight lost, Osnabrück gets their second win of the campaign. And it gives them a little bit of hope. They are still 7 points adrift of Hansa Rostock and Kaiserslautern. It's just winning is something to shoot for. It gives them a bit of optimism. And who knows? Maybe they can build from this. I thought Philip Kuhn was great between the pipes. He was under a lot of pressure throughout the game. And, you know, Hannover did throw the kitchen sink at Kuhn, but he showcased why he is the definitive number one, and hindsight's obviously 2020. But it was clear that he's really been a much safer pair of hands in goal for Valfell and Dilili Weissen. So, yeah, still a massive task for them going forward. Keeping a clean sheet also for Osnabrück has not been particularly easy this season. I think their last clean sheet was against Hertha back on match day 17. So, yeah, they take the points. They've only lost once in the last 5 games. It's just that the accumulation of points has been really difficult in terms of winning. So, yeah, now they don't have the worst defense in the league as well, which is a massive bonus. But, yeah, obviously scoring goals going forward is going to be the biggest test. For Hannover, they had their moments. I thought they were really strong in the opening phase of the game. They had that really good free kick from Leopold. They did pepper Kuhn quite often, but I don't know. It took them a while to get back up and going. They lost Trezoldi to concussion. Now, we've talked about concussion quite a lot over the time we've done the podcast. And look, I'm of the understanding of players so desperately wanting to get back out there. Because they don't want to let their team down. There's the whole psychology of not wanting to disappoint, wanting to soldier on. You know, how often do we see a player, you know, get a cut to the forehead, you know, from head-to-head contact and just tough it out? But I think, you know, you've got to give your flowers to Trezoldi, who clearly recognised that he was not in a state to play at a certain level and took himself off. And I think that takes a lot of courage, but also self-awareness of the situation. Obviously, concussions are a serious issue in sport, all sport, some more than others. But, you know, in football, where these collisions happen and your head gets kind of tossed around, whether you're heading the ball or you're going up for a duel, I think that showed a great bit of maturity for someone to acknowledge that it's best for the team if I come off. And, you know, they were very fortunate. They had Cedric Toikat on the bench, and Vogel Sammer came on late in the second half as well. So that was quite impressive, but as a whole, really disappointing. This was a golden opportunity to really put the pressure on Hamburg heading into the Sunday games, and they just didn't find the mark. To lose to a team that they're a little bit more stable than they were when they pumped Osnabrück 7-0 at home. Overall, it's just really a missed opportunity, a golden opportunity to really put the pressure on. And now the next 3 games, the game against Fortuna Düsseldorf at home on Saturday is a massive, massive match. And they've got, and really, you know, with Fortuna winning, and we'll talk about them in Group 3, it really opens up the question marks again. It feels like we're back here. You know, they did have Marcel Halstenberg back, and they sort of switched up defensively. Arian Bay played at left back, which was okay. You can see that they miss a specialist playing in that role. I thought Deem he actually looked a lot better at the on the left. So, you know, if Maroya can get back to fitness, which is going to be the big point for them going forward, his, you know, his availability is kind of massive for them, just in terms of the way they are structurally and wanting to play in that back four, which is what they've really adopted going forward. But, you know, they won't get him till essentially post the international break. So they're going to have to keep finding solutions, and whether they can actually solidify the defense. Maybe they might switch it back to a back three in the next game against Fortuna. We'll have to wait and see. But, yep, Fortuna, then Wiesbaden and Kaiserslautern are the next three. For Osnabrück, as we mentioned, they're in Hamburg. And then it's Kaiserslautern away, which becomes a massive six-pointer for both teams. And if Osnabrück can get a result there, it really puts the pressure on the teams above to continue. Just to put that sort of physical pressure points-wise, will be a massive difference. Then they head to the international break after playing Fortuna Düsseldorf. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the Group 2 games. We're going to start at the Fritz Walter Stadion. It's Kaiserslautern against Karlsruhe. 2024 is here in full swing, and that means it's time for a New Year's resolution check-in with our friends at Manscaped. It's never too late to level up your grooming game and keep your bush tamed. Manscaped's new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is every man's cheat code to look good, feel good, and turn the page on confidence this year. Whether you're going for a trim or that clean-shaven look, this trimmer has you covered. Trusted by over 10 million men worldwide, now is your time to get a grip on your grooming with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code 2BundesligaPod for 20% off and free shipping. The ball has dropped, but don't drop the ball on your balls. Let's talk about the biggest two-way threat in world football. That's Manscaped's fifth-generation lawnmower. It's not just a trimmer, it's your grooming sidekick. Equipped with two skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It's like having a personal stylus at your fingertips, or, well, wherever you need it. Did we mention it's waterproof? Because a trimmer in the shower is the only way to start the day. And for the men who want the full grooming experience, look no further than Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0. In this grooming kit, you get the trusted lawnmower, Manscaped's ear and nose hair trimmer, and essential aftercare products with a crop soother, ball aftershave lotion, and crop preserver, anti-chafing ball deodorant. Yes, it's deodorant for your footies. Bet you didn't think you needed that. As a gesture for the new year, they have even thrown in two free gifts, the Boxers 2.0 and the Shed 2.0 toiletry bag, because they know good and well you're still rocking your Boxers from high school. Let's face it, resolutions might come and go, but a well-groomed you is here to stay, thanks to Manscaped. Remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code 2BundesligaPod at manscaped.com. Embrace a new you, and definitely embrace a new trimmer, courtesy of Manscaped. Now, back to the podcast. Kaiserslautern are in must-win territory once more when they welcomed Karlsruhe to the Fritz Walter Stadion on Saturday afternoon. It was Freedom Funkel's first game in charge of FCK at home, but more importantly, regional supremacy was on the line with Karlsruhe coming to town. Two sides who definitely do not like each other, and it was going to be a really interesting test to see which team could get the upper hand. The match was also a day of remembering Andreas Bremer, who sadly passed away at age 63. The Kaiserslautern legend made 86 appearances for the German national team and was part of the World Cup winning side in 1990. The match was very much a tribute to, hopefully, a win for Kaiserslautern, but many couldn't have predicted the second half that would come of it, as Karlsruhe really put the pressure on. It was a game really of efficiency, all told. Both teams had 8 shots on goal, but Kaiserslautern ended with a bagel. Karlsruhe, 4 goals in the second half. Marvin Vanicek, Igor Matanovic, Paul Niebel, and substitute Budu Zivjevadze all getting on the score sheet, and what was a massive result for Karlsruhe in particular. Two players who I thought were great in this game for Karlsruhe were Dennis Burnich and Paul Niebel. Burnich really set the strings, and it was his assist for the opening goal, and it was part of the lead up to the second. Just brilliant football. It's really good that he's come of age and has started to really ascend as a pivotal piece to this Karlsruhe team, which already has very strong midfield presence with the aforementioned Vanicek and Niebel. and they just worked really well together. They seemed a little bit more stable as well. That, you know, that Nikolai Rapp, Jerome Gondorf double pivot seems to be working, and the switch to having a bit more midfield stability with the five group midfield, and having Matanovic as the one out striker has really worked for them quite efficiently. And we talk about the need for consistency and continuity. It does seem that this Karlsruhe team seems to work quite well with this setup. We know defensively they are still the way they are, and obviously keeping a clean sheet was quite massive, but forward of the ball, they looked, when they were able to get out in space, they looked really, really dangerous. And yeah, a massive result for them. It puts them into ninth place on the table. More importantly, 10 points clear of the drop. So that, and you can see at the end of the game, Christian Eichner, just the exuberance and celebration, and the knowledge that they are in such a good position now to really go on with it. I don't think, you know, 9 points adrift of Hamburg in third, it doesn't seem particularly conceivable. However, you know, stranger things have happened in the division. For Kaiserslautern, it was just miserable. It didn't feel like they'd improved on anything in particular. And yeah, the defense was just, yeah, you couldn't say a lot positive. The second goal in particular, Matanovic practically walked it in. He fell over himself, and it almost seemed as if he wasn't going to score, and then he did. I don't like criticizing goalkeepers, as you all know, but I think after a bit of assessment of watching Julian Kral, I don't know if he can stabilize the position. I thought the second goal he looked really bad on. He doesn't take anything. He missed the ball. Like, you've got hands. Use your hands. Or run through Matanovic. You know, I'd rather someone concede, the keeper concede a penalty, than essentially let the striker and the ball waltz through. It was bad. And you could sense it in the stadium as well, just watching it from afar. Like, it just started to, the energy started to sap out of the crowd. And the obvious dawning of, we're in serious trouble. You know, obviously, Freedom Funkel's only been in there for 2 games. And, yeah, you wouldn't be particularly convinced about what they've done so far. And I know it's early doors, and we've got to temper expectations. But when you're in a relegation fight, you know, Google Calendar. But you can't afford to not take points. Every point matters in this situation, and you can't be laying goose eggs like this. It was a horrid performance. And their next 2 games are huge. They're against 2 sides that are in the relegation battle. Hansa Rostock, who are behind them just on goal difference, and Osnabrück, as we mentioned, at home. They've got to take something from these games. They obviously have to defend a lot better. And they needs to showcase a cohesive unit of a team that is working together. Because there are a few teams in that relegation battle that you don't see it. You don't see them overturning it. And, you know when you watch, you know, young teams, like youth kids play, and at the end of, like, the report, it's got all played well. You couldn't do that for this Kaiserslautern team. It actually quite the opposite. If you just wouldn't write it, but I think we all acknowledge that they were really bad in this game. And they've got a really, their road ahead seems very daunting given the situation. And yeah, you just can't see it. It's just crazy how they've won so few games over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months of the season. We'll see what they do. So Hansa Osnabrück, then at Hanover for the top game before the break. For Karlsruhe, Greuther Fürth and Kiel, 2 very tough games coming up, both sides very much in the promotion hunt, and then Magdeburg at home. That should be a fun game as well. Speaking of Fürth, let's talk about them. They welcome Nürnberg to the Sportpark Ronhof Thomas Sommer for the Frankenland Derby. These two teams played it out like a derby game. It was physical, it was nasty. There was absolutely no love lost between the two teams. Lots of bit of aggro. It was good. in the sense that it meant so much to the players, because as fans, you just want them to bring a similar energy to how you feel about the game. And the disliking between the two sides was very prominent throughout this game. So obviously it made things a little bit more, shall we say, testy when Nürnberg opened the scoring, and it was Sebastian Andersson who has really been a good fit for them. We know that he's still really growing in the team, but a good header to open the scoring on 8 minutes and get on the score sheet. They almost made it two on 25 minutes. They caught Fürth being a little bit too aggressive. They had a one-on-one with Goller and Ubig. Goller beats Ubig, but it hits the post and comes out. And had that gone in, it really could have changed the complexion of the game, in the sense that you now have to see what Fürth have got on the table. Because 2 minutes after that miss, they equalized through Armindo Sieb. A sensational hit from distance. And Karl Klaus, he tried, but wasn't good enough to get a save. The game absolutely turned on its head on 34 minutes when Jens Kastrup was sent off for a second yellow card. And I don't know. The game was aggressive, and I can understand why Robert Schroeder, in essence, made an example of Kastrup. I think the first foul might have been a little bit worse than the second. I don't think there was much in the second. I really don't. I don't think it was in that cynical nature of, you know, trying to stop the break. It just seemed like two guys who just kind of tripped over each other. But alas, the sending off really transcended the game, because Nürnberg didn't have a shot. Well, they had one shot for the remainder of the, you know, they really lacked any sort of offensive intensity, unsurprisingly. After that, because it was all hands on deck to defend, and unfortunately for them, they concede just before the hour. Branimir Hrgota finding Sieb again. Sieb's now got 9 goals this season, 6 in his last 6 games, including the brace, and 3 points for Greuther Fürth. An important 3 points for them, given the 3-game losing streak they were on heading into match day 23. It gives them just that little bit of hope. It means they leapfrog Hanover into fourth, and they're only 3 points behind Hamburg for that relegation playoff spot. So they have put themselves in prime position to make a run. They are the second best defensive team in the league, and they've shown it here. But you can't help but say that they didn't benefit from the 10, you know, Nürnberg going down to 10 men, because Nürnberg had one opportunity in the second half, and that was the... That was the effort from Okunuki, which was saved by Ulbig late on in the game. But it was just, yeah. I mean, they did what they had to do. Winning is just all important. But to beat your fiercest rival, it's a massive result for Fürth. And we'll see now, because they're in a position where they're the sort of the first benefactor should Hamburg slip up. And... Who knows how that? I mean, it can happen. It can absolutely happen. But yeah, love Zeeb's game. I think the question marks, you know, throughout the season for them is been finding an attacking option other than Hrgota, who can really lead the line. So you can have Branimir playing as a number 10. You know, again, it's been Lempele and Zeeb as the starters, and Zeeb really has been the ascender. Really making a claim to lead the line with conviction and force. And yeah, you know, it was tough his first season, but now he's really grown. And since Christmas, he's been on an absolute tear for them. And should Fürth put themselves in the playoff spot, it'll be because of the likes of Hrgota and Zeeb in the attacking. And let's see how they go against Karlsruhe on Saturday night. Then home game against Elversberg, and then at Hansa Rostock. For Nürnberg, big game against Braunschweig on Saturday, then a trip to Magdeburg, and then at home for St. Pauli before we head off to the international break. And lastly, for Group 2, let's head off to Magdeburg. Magdeburg hosting Schalke in the top game on match day 23. There was nothing top about it in the first half. Magdeburg were just brilliant. Three goals in the opening first half from Silas Kanaka, a penalty from Mohamed El Ankouri, and Tatsuya Ito was enough to see off a very disappointing Schalke, all told. What Tietz did was really good. Lots of wing play. He knows that Brunner and Ovuyan like to get forward. And yeah, they very much exploited that to their advantage because both showcased they're not particularly strong defensively and getting lots of action. They had Atik on the right, which is quite unusual. But given Ito's strengths and Ito being quite similar in the actions of Atik, you know, both were still very dangerous. I think Ito was really good in this game. It was a bit of a surprise start, given he's been more as a cameo player for Magdeburg this season. But he was brilliant in this game and deserves the flowers. More importantly for Magdeburg, with the win, 8 points clear of the drop zone. So they've got the breathing space that they needed. But it was clear for all to see that Magdeburg's first half was great. The second half, not so much. They very much relied on playing on the... still dominating the ball, but they sat a little bit deeper defensively, invited a bit of trouble, and perhaps a more clinical team would have made the game a lot more interesting than it otherwise would have been. So, good result for Magdeburg. They've got Paderborn next, away, then Nuremberg at home, and then Karlsruhe away. Let's talk about Schalke, because obviously that's the big talking point of this game. Yeah, their first half was just miserable. They were just not at the races at all. And it's clear that there are certain players that you just cannot play. I think I would like to see a bit more Brennan Soppy action. He came on at halftime. I thought he was okay. So it wouldn't surprise me if he starts against the game. Starts against St. Pauli. But it's just... it was quite interesting because Paul Seguin essentially said he was fed up with the losing and all of this stuff. And like, you're part of the problem. There's got to be some self-awareness of, yeah, we all hate losing. I'm not a great loser. But if you can be part of the solution, then why? What are we doing? I think there's such an unbelievably bad stench going on in Gelsenkirchen. Like, it's a real toxic environment because they just there's no fight in the team at all. I thought the penalty was a bit silly because the ball's not really near the area of Ito and Brunner, but yet he feels the need to do something that will force the referee to make a decision. We always talk about if you put yourself in a situation that the referee has to make a decision or the VAR has to make a decision, it will. Don't put yourself in that situation. It's because he was caught ball watching. Ito was about to slick past him and, yeah, he just does something clumsy. Really clumsy and unnecessary. Awful. I guess a quick word on Carroll Gerrits, because we know he's got some really interesting tactical ideas, but this squad, how it's constructed, and his coaching style and tactical ideas don't fit. It doesn't fit. I love that he wants to be a bit more innovative, but these players just don't have that. They're not good enough to articulate what he wants his teams to do, which is a real shame. But that's the reality of the situation. They can't do it. They just don't have the skills. Defensively, they're obviously a train wreck. And any team with some sort of versatility and variety in the way they attack, they have so much ease. It's just so easy for them. It makes you wonder. I at the time of recording this, there's been no news. Unfortunately, it feels as if he's going to be on borrowed time soon, if not already, which is, it is the nature of the beast. I guess the only positive Schalke can really take, as dismissive as this is that everyone else around them lost. I mean, that's something, but their next three, you don't feel, the way they're playing at the moment, you don't feel confident at all they will get a result, whether it be St. Pauli at home, Paderborn, and then at Hertha. I think the way the team is trekking, especially defensively, yeah, I can't see it. And even offensively, like, they had chances to get something from this game. Whether it was Karaman, whether it was Lasma, whether it was Soppy, whether it was Tirota. I mean, they could have easily got themselves back into the game and made it very uncomfortable. But alas, they didn't. And now the next three games, whether it's going to be with Gerrards or not, we'll wait and see. But, you know, they've got to create some sort of momentum. They're only 4 points above the drop, granted, but that can easily evaporate, as we've seen throughout the season. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens in their next three games. Let's take a final break. And on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games of Match Day 23, starting at the Eintracht Stadion when Braunschweig hosted Hertha. Hertha were seeking three wins in a row when they made the journey to Braunschweig on Saturday afternoon. The one thing that we've talked about since Daniel Schoening has become head coach is don't concede the first goal, because this is a team that will happily sit deep, hit teams on the break, and look very dangerous doing so. But I don't think they were prepared for a team that was going to press them intensely when trying to build from the back. And it was a terrible pass from Andreas Bukalakis that led to the opening goal of the game. His pass to no one in particular was feasted on by Fabio Kaufmann, and Kaufmann, first time, hit it past Tjaak Ernst to make it 1-0. The pressure continued from Braunschweig at the pressing end. They really didn't want Hertha to build from the back, and they gave them very little time to do so. Chances did come quick and fast through Philippe and Gomez, but neither could find the back of the net. However, the halftime brought some perspective for Hertha, much needed. One of the introductions into the second half was Ibrahim Maza. Maza was quite impressive coming on, and he scored the equalising goal when Fabian Riese teed him up, and it was an excellent finish to beat Ron Torben Hoffmann. Things got really hard for Braunschweig later in the second half when Hasan Kurucay was sent off with a really nasty tackle on Palko Dardai, but Hertha couldn't find the game-winning goal. 1-1 apiece, it means that for Braunschweig, they are 2 points clear of 16th, Kaiserslautern and Hansa. And for Hertha, they're three games unbeaten and are only 8 points away from the promotion playoff. But more importantly, they're within the reach of the top six, just 4 points behind Paderborn. Look, this was a tough game. Both sides really couldn't get much going. I thought the quality of chances that Hertha provided didn't really offer a whole lot. It was interesting. They had Tabakovic coming off the bench at halftime. Niederlechner started as the number nine and it didn't really have any influence on the game. I thought Hertha's first half was just strange. Didn't really know what they were trying to do. They found it quite difficult to break down the press that Braunschweig produced. And, look, they were a lot better in the second half when they took off Bukalakis, they took off Niederlechner and Winkler. They seemed a little bit more dynamic. There was a bit more urgency in the way they were playing as well. And, they could have got a result here. It definitely wasn't beyond the means of them being able to do that. They just couldn't find a winning goal. I know this is not particularly groundbreaking analysis from the game, but truth be told, I think Braunschweig defended really well throughout the game and didn't really give Hertha a lot of options. I thought the second half it wasn't much of the same. They seemed to not have that same sort of intensity, and it was a great goal from Maza to finish the way he did. For Hertha, things are fine. I think in the long-term scheme of things over the next couple of seasons, they can build. This is all about building. And having Fabian Riese re-sign, extend his contract to 2028, that was the big story heading into the match day for Hertha. And he's such an important player for what they're trying to achieve, which is, of course, a roadmap back to the Bundesliga. we'll see if they can achieve a continued unbeaten run. They've got Kiel at home on Friday night, which should be a really good game. Then at St. Pauli, both of those games are world feed. And then against Schalke, which I'm pretty certain off the top of my head, don't have it in front of me, that should be a world feed game as well. So we'll see if Hertha can do the sweep on Schalke, but some interesting games for them. Of course, for Braunschweig, they've got massive games coming up with Nürnberg, Hansa Rostock and Paderborn. If they can take 3-4 points, get themselves up to 28 after 27, after 26 matches, I've lost the ability to count. That will put them in a really good situation, especially if results go their way. They do have that massive game against Hansa on the 8th, which, vital for both teams to get points in that one. Let's talk about Hansa. They were at Düsseldorf on Sunday afternoon, and they, of course, are looking desperately to restore some victory pride. As were Fortuna. Fortuna haven't won in 2024 in the Zweite Bundesliga and were desperate to break their duck. It looked as if that Hansa were going to be the team dictating the play when they thought they'd open the scoring through Juan José Pérez, who scored last week. Unfortunately for him, he was offside. Junior Brumado, look, he does the right thing, but the sort of flick on with the initial pass would have had Pereira onside, but the flick on, which was seen pretty necessary, helped get Pereira onside. It got him offside, and ultimately, no bueno. Two goals in the space of 3 minutes was enough to do the damage for Fortuna. Felix Klaus with an excellent goal on 16 minutes, and then Tanaka was equally as good from distance to get his fifth goal of the campaign. They probably could have had a third late on through Solis, but it wasn't to be for them. But more importantly for Fortuna Düsseldorf, it's a win against Hansa. They finally get back to winning ways this year. And perhaps they can build something going forward into the remainder of the Rückrunde. Pretty slow start for them. But once they got the goal, they really ran with the confidence. It's not to say that Hansa didn't have their moments. I thought Hansa were quite good after the break. I thought they had some really good moments of intelligent play. But, just like that little bit of quality in front of goal to get a result. They could have had a penalty. It looked like Jordi De Vries handled the ball. I think the angle was pretty bad that they had available. So it seemed very difficult to make a decision. But, I think that like they could take something out of the start of the second half, but ultimately just the lack of sheer quality really deserted Hansa Rostock. It seemed as if it was Pereira and Dressel that were going to try and carry Rostock, and not many others really gave much options for Mirsad Selimbegovic's side. And now you just have to wonder what happens, because their next two games are gigantic. It can't be lost how important the game against Kaiserslautern and Eintracht Braunschweig are going to be. I'll have to get results in those games. It's plain and simple. Like, there's no real sort of gymnastics required. They're 17th. They are, 2 points from Braunschweig in the last safe place. They are the second worst defensive team in the league. And it's clear that this team has got to find a way. Otherwise, relegation is very much in their future. But we'll see. We'll see what they can come up with. For Düsseldorf, yeah, good win. Tough games coming up, though. Hanover and Hamburg. Both games are world feat. We'll see. I think they were much better. It was interesting that Tune switched it to a 4-4-2 with Daferner and Vermeer leading the line. I thought that worked quite well for them. Interesting he keeps that formation, because we've seen coaches change it up and he'd been resisting for quite a while to change from his 4-3-2-1 to a 4-4-2. But it did seem Vermeer, even though Vermeer and Daferner didn't score, Daferner had the flick on for the opener, and Vermeer had a couple of chances in the game. So I'm intrigued. I'm actually really interested to see how they look going forward, if they're gonna go with that combination. We'll have to wait and see how they get on in Hanover on Saturday afternoon. Lastly, let's head to Wiesbaden. Wiesbaden hosted Paderborn on Friday night. This game ended 2-1 in favour of Lukas Kwasniok's side. I think Wiesbaden, you know, they scored against the run of play. It was a good counter-attacking move, which saw Franko Kovacevic open the scoring on 30 minutes, his third goal of the game. Yeah, counter-attacking goals were really the theme of the game, because Paderborn got theirs on 39 minutes through Cohen Kostens, his second goal of the season. Really good play from Paderborn, and then the third, and then the game-winning goal was another counter with Philip Bilbia getting his fifth goal of the campaign. And Bilbia and Kostens in particular, they worked quite well together. They were able to really, in those quick transitions, they put what has been a pretty solid Wiesbaden defense all season under immense pressure. And, you know, it was clear that Wiesbaden really didn't have any strength foothold in the game. They struggled to get any sort of control. The goal was massively against the run of play. And even late in the game where they were, you know, they were throwing the kitchen sink at it and hoping something would happen, Paderborn still looked more likely to score a third goal because they were very much set up for the counter. They'd brought on Serloid Conte, who, as we know, has absolute pace to burn. But unfortunately, he didn't get to use it because he was injured after coming on. And I feel like this is probably the only stadium where this is at the moment, off the top of my head, where it's a real issue, where the advertising boards are way too close to the proximity of the pitch. And because it's the only one where I think the nets are basically touching the back of the net is touching the advertising boarding. And Conte, who on a night that was quite slippery, couldn't keep his footing, and yeah, he hurt his ribs. Not for stopping himself, but it was the landing area where I think he landed on top of the advertising boarding, and you know, he didn't get to complete the game, and you know, he'd only been on for not long enough to make any impact in the game, but that's what they game planned for him to come on and really burn it up, and yeah, he was on for what, 9 minutes before having to come off again for Zentner. So maybe that, you know, if we're talking about player safety, that would be something that needs to be fixed, because it does seem way too close, and now we've seen an injury because of that. But for Wiesbaden, they've only won one since match day 13. We were applauding them, and fairly so, for their fantastic start to the season, and you know, they broke their record over the opening 10 games of a campaign, and it was well worth the plaudits. But yeah, they've essentially been pulled back into the relegation zone, and they've got the 5-point gap, which is still a gap, but as we mentioned with Schalke, that gap can evaporate quite quickly with results, and with important games coming up, we could see that happen. It's very, very plausible that it does. We'll see what they can do it against Elversberg. Then they've got a home game against Hanover, and then end this section of games before the international break against Hamburg. Paderborn, of course, got Magdeburg, which will be a really fun game to watch. Then at Schalke, and then Braunschweig at home. We should find out what the fixtures will be from the international break onwards, match day 27 to match day 33. Of course, match day 34. We have Sunday kickoff games at 3:30 local time. The other big news, of course, was that the DFL has squashed the marketing partnership from Private Equity, even though CVC was still in the running after months of protesting, intense protesting. There is no deal anymore. And there are plenty of great outlets of sources who've broadcast this. Matty Ford, in particular, from DW, has absolutely chopped it up for those who are looking for the English language version of what has happened. DW in general, Tom Gannoy's video as well, short video, was also quite informative. But yeah, now we'll see what happens with that situation and whether they try something similar in the future or perhaps something that had perhaps a little bit more thought to it. But that'll do it for us, or for me, I should say. Thank you again for listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from match day 24. I hope you have a fantastic weekend to whatever you do. And we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.